Hello and welcome back to the Kickback Pod. I am your host, Gavin Tony, joined alongside my co-host, aka producer Dom. Pat could not make it today, but it's all good. Dom is here. Dom, how you doing?
Oh man, I'm good. We got Pat on like the opposite of the side of the Cal Ripken streak over here. Like,
yeah, well, you know, yeah, it's putting up what numbers? It's crazy. Putting up what numbers?
No, it's good to be here, man. Miss Pat,
great though. To be here. We gotta get Pat in here. We gotta figure this out. Maybe we have to take another trip down to Drexel Hill and figure all this out again. So yeah, but. With that being said, though, we are in good hands because the NBA Finals is here, but we got a ghost. Jordan, a guest joining us now. This guy is a big Cowboys fan, all right? I don't know how I feel about that over here. Voice of the Sixers, my cousin. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hand together for Trent Tony. What's up, Trent?
What's up, fellas? Thanks for having me.
First guest on the pod, man. First guest on the pod.
I feel honored. I like that. I like to start things out. We'll start it on a bang.
Yes, sir. Start it on the bang. It is. So, ladies and gentlemen, just disclaimer, it's a little bit later, so I cannot yell like I like to. So, that may be good or bad. But, the NBA Finals is here. The Knicks lost in six games to the Pacers, and the last game wasn't really even close. We are going to touch on in another later date, but feel free, anybody. Can talk about now, but deeper dive. The Knicks fired Tom Thibodeau after that, just as well. But the finals are set. It's Thunder, it's Pacers, Oklahoma, Indiana, two small market teams, two very well coached teams as well, great front offices, and two stars, and one doesn't really get considered a superstar because he's not consistent every night, which I think that label should be thrown out because I don't agree with it. But Trent, I'm coming to you. Indiana defeats the Knicks, who look like the clear-cut favorites to go to the finals because of the momentum they were on. I said on this podcast, Tyrese Haliburton had to be the villain in the series, and he wasn't really the villain as much. It was more Pascal Siakam, but in game one, he showed up when they needed him. Game two, Pascal Siakam came out with 39 points. Game three, the bench won. But my question for you is to start off is, how do you feel about the way that series ended and then as a whole for the Pacers?
It was a good series. You know, the Pacers came out and they fought. I think we're starting to see this is more depth. Everybody who has more depth is winning. So 100%. Pacers winning that. The Pacers with Nembhard, I think, Nesmith, Toppin, TJ McConnell, O'Brien had a big game six. People like them guys. They're very valuable in the league. So I think the Knicks, they had more star power, but those guys really showed up when it mattered. So, like I said, it was a good series, but the Pacers, strength in numbers, kind of like the old Warriors motto, that definitely took place in that series.
I mean, strength in numbers for sure. I mean, you can't win a game continuously by running the same 6 to 8 people 30 plus minutes a game. That's a recipe for disaster. It's not sustainable. I mean, my biggest thing is you got bounced out by Trae Young two years ago, right? Last year you go up against Pacers and you were injured and fatigued. You would think that there would be a switch to the game plan around this year, considering that you got Cat. No, you run into, and that's another thing that to be talked about too is Cat's defensive efforts in the series was like lackadaisical. It was arguably not even defense at some points. But you can't win strength of numbers. You can't win a game with 8 people and the other team is using a whole bench down. TJ McConnell was a force off the bench. Obi Toppin came in when needed to off the bench. Tyrese Haliburton was the facilitator. Pascal Siakam was the scorer. You can't beat that.
No, you can't. And, you know, I think, you know, Trent touches on a good point when it comes to depth. You know, this Pacers team, I think a lot of people forget at the beginning of the year, while, yes, they were coming off of an Eastern Conference Finals appearance, they were off to a rough 10-15 start. And, you know, that was in part due to multiple injuries, you know, with Nembhard and Nesmith, among other contributors. But since they've gotten everybody back, they've gone 52-21. That's more victories in any stretch than any team. You know, in the postseason, that, and that, you know, you see how they play with that depth. They're able to wear teams down. They're able to you know, play a very fast and up-tempo brand of basketball. And, you know, it, a very effective brand of basketball on both ends of the floor. They have the number five offense in the league, which, you know, I think is their heavyweight in this matchup with OKC. And they also have, you know, the number nine defense. This is a really good team that can play downhill. They put a lot of pressure on the rim. You know, and to do that consistently, you need to be able to wear guys down. And the way Rick Carlisle has managed, you know, these pieces, you know, yes, they have, you know, Haliburton and Siakam, you know, championship caliber pieces, but, you know, it's the guys around them that make them that much more dangerous. And they're a big reason why they're here.
Aaron Nesmith is a name that comes to mind. I mean, in game one, the man hit seven threes, unconscious from beyond the arc. Didn't really replicate that for the rest of the series, but, I mean, that just shows that the firepower that the Pacers had. The one common theme I use, Trent, when I talk about these Pacers team, I think of the Brooklyn Nets from 2017. You got a team in the Brooklyn Nets from that time where it was D'Angelo Russell. You had a guy in Kenny Atkinson, I think, was the coach at the time.
Yep.
And you had Jared Allen, bum-ass Jared Dudley. Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, basically a group of guys that played well together, and they just played basketball, and they found a way to win games. This is what that team could have been if they kept going together. They don't, if D'Angelo Russell doesn't leave Brooklyn and go to Golden State that summer. If this is what the Pacers are, the Pacers, you traded for Tyrese Haliburton, and you got him here. He was a part of that Domantas Sabonis trade that sent him there. And I believe Buddy Hield as well, which is not there no more. But Tyrese Haliburton grew into a star. He is a true point guard. He averages about over 8.5 assists a game in the playoffs. That's what the over-under was on FanDuel. But I would say that Pacers team, is this notion that they got lucky needs to be end. It has to end. This is a team that is dangerous. They did it. You don't go back-to-back in the Eastern Conference Finals like that. Last year, they didn't win. They got swept because of injuries, and they were leading in some of those games that no one remembers. No one remembers Haliburton not playing at the end of that Boston series, and I think Miles Turner got banged up as well. Those are important pieces, and Pascal Siakam just got traded there last year. But with that being said, the Knicks are done. It's simple. Good luck on your coaching searches. I heard that the guy that we talked about the other day, Dom, wasn't part of it. But on to something more relevant. On the West, the Thunder took care of business. Anthony Edwards and company, they went down in five games. Dom, me and you kind of had it in 6-7. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a great series. Jalen Williams, the X Factor who I talked about. Did you guys know that when Jalen Williams scores 17 or more points in the playoffs, the Thunder have a more highly chance of winning the game? I forget, I think they're 17 or something.
Yep.
And then when he scores less than that, they have a losing record. The man is an expert. The dude is an all-star. All right. And he is needed. You have a team in the Thunder who have a starting five that can score double digits on any given night. You have the number one overall pick in Chet Holmgren, who I've been really critical of as of late because I don't feel like his play has matched the value of the pick. Granted, this is like his second full real year, and he missed some time still. I still think Isaiah Hartenstein plays better at the center position, but it's interesting. This is an interesting team. Trent, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Take down the Timberwolves in five games. What was your thoughts just on that series as a whole?
Same thing, strength in numbers, man. You got Caruso, you got Wiggins, you got Isaiah Joe, you got Dort. And then, like you said, Jalen Williams, that's how crazy their team is. We're calling him an X-Factor. He's an all-star. So, like I said, strength in numbers. I think T-Wolves, if I'm talking about them, it's time to rebuild. I don't think Rudy Gobert can work. Julius Randle didn't show up. I think Julius Randle was your third guy. You'll be all right, but they got to get another facilitator or at least a scorer to help Anthony Edwards out there. It just looked like it was 1-on-5 because it really was. So I like the T-Wolves depth. They have the depth with the bad guys with McDaniels And then you got Alexander Walker, and then you got, who am I thinking of? McDaniels. So I like them, but like I said, OKC, strength in numbers. They got guys who's just sneaky good. Like, we don't even talk about Hartenstein. He's really
Nope.
good, who the Knicks just lost. So that was a key factor for them to see what they did without him. They could have really used him. So Thunder, definitely real deep team. But it was a good series. Like I said, I was pulling for Ant-Man, but strength in numbers, he was out there fighting for his life on everything.
And that's the thing. Yo, Don, we talked about it. The Timberwolves actually set themselves back. Rudy Gobert is just what Mitchell Robinson was. And you saw that. Rudy Gobert magically has what a 20-20 game in the playoffs. He's not giving you 20 every night. Rudy Gobert's job is to block shots and grab rebounds, and arguably he can't do that some days. Especially like yo, the best part about when they had Cat on that team last year, Cat can go out to the perimeter. Is he a great perimeter defender? No, but is he better than Rudy Gobert? Yes.
Yes.
They went at Rudy Gobert in the Dallas Mavericks of last year. At that, and especially in that clinching game where the Luka hits a shot over him. They knew it. Offensively, I agree with Trent. There's not enough there. McDaniels is cool. He's not gonna give you what you need to, to move on. Julius Randle shot his load early in the series. He had what 25 early and then
Yeah, and his
held off.
shots went down, and he took less shots as the series progressed.
And then you got Ant 1v5. I love Mike Conley, but I understand you can't. And what happened to Rob Dillingham? Mr. Oh, he's gonna go up there and help. We never saw him.
Yeah, they kind of stashed him away.
They kind of stashed him away. But I will say what didn't get stashed away though was pure diamonds. And I don't know about a whole rebuild, but you gotta do something. You shouldn't have traded. If you were gonna trade away one of your twin towers, you should have traded away Gobert, not Cat, because offense, you could find a defensive center easily in this league, I believe. I mean, the Thunder did it. The Thunder got Isaiah Hartenstein, and he's a monster there. He actually finished his role very well. Down. Thunder, I mean, Thunder, what term was, we kind of saw it. It was like unfair. It 1v5, like Trent said.
Yeah, this so listen, I think the bottom line here when we look at OKC is this has been the best team since things tipped off in October. They're the seventh team ever to win 68 games. They have the highest average margin of victory ever, and their net defensive rating is one of the highest since the ABA NBA merger. And they have the best air adjusted efficiency differential since the 96 Bulls. Look, this is the top overall seed in the 2025 postseason for a reason. They are a complete team on both ends of the floor. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had the MVP year that many of us expected him to have. He not only did he deliver on that, but he delivered with flying colors. He makes the guys around him better. He draws a lot of attention that allows some of these other guys, like a Jalen Williams, to flourish offensively. Defensively, they're very versatile, and I think that's going to cause problems for the Pacers. You have the optionality of Lugrens Dort or Alex Caruso.
Caruso did a damn good job on Jokic, and we don't talk
Yeah,
about
and listen, that was a, you know, if there's anything that kind of paints the picture of what this postseason has been, or what this season rather has been for OKC, look, that was a Titanic test. To go up against a Denver team that is 2 years now removed off of a world championship, and Alex Caruso was a big part of that. And credit to Mark Dagenault for making those adjustments and putting Caruso in those spots defensively to front Jokic and front three quarter and to kind of allow their help to work a little differently than a lot of teams do with him. There's a lot of versatility with this OKC team that I think makes them the favorite in this matchup.
Moving on to the finals, the table was set. First off, this is something the NBA needed personally. I don't know how you guys feel about
No,
this,
I
but
totally agree.
I think the NBA needed a different face. I feel like it got a little predictable. You were looking like, all right, Boston's going to be in there. The fact that you have two small market teams going for it, and the way how they did it was they did it the right way. They don't have no real superstars on the team. I mean, well, Shai Gilgeous is a superstar. That's the MVP. But he developed into that. Tyrese Haliburton is going to be, in my honest opinion, if he gets his scoring up a little more, he may be a future MVP in years to come. But they did it in a way, both coaches did it in a way, well, both organizations, I say, did it in a way where it's against the normal norm for the NBA. Look at, you know, a couple years ago, Kevin Durant goes to the Warriors, and they go on to win, you know, championship after championship, and they would have had another one. Then you got the Raptors. They traded for Kawhi, and they basically bought a championship that year. Like, the fact that you have two teams that did the old-school way, which is you draft or you trade and you develop and you go from that way to get there is something great. I think this finals is going to be good for the NBA as a whole. Trent, I mean, talk about it. This is something different that we have seen in recent years. We have never seen a finals where both teams – did it through this way. It's kind of weird to look at it if you think about it.
Yeah, it's starting a new generation. I think Boston was the first team to really put numbers in depth and then worrying more about wings. Like you said, the big man is needed, but it's needed. You can have different big men in different situations. Boston kind of showed you that with Horford and Porzingis. Now you kind of see it with, you got Holmgren, Hartenstein, and the Pacers have Miles Turner. They were, like I said, Bryant. They even threw out my man Tony Bradley a couple games. Yeah. So definitely see what you're saying. Yeah, it's a lot. Teams are going to have to start building. It's no more buying more championships. Even the Raptors, they had on the stash, they had Fred VanVleet. Siakam was homegrown. So Norman Powell, they moved and got him. So things like that, I think you're going
to have Ibaka too. I forget about him. Yeah,
they traded for him. He was a trade piece. But, like, they had homegrown guys that came out of nowhere that we didn't know about. Even the Heat did that with Duncan Robinson, Max Strus. So you're going to have to build those guys. You're going to have to get those 3-and-D wings. You're going to have to get more wings and be versatile so you can play different defenses. Like you guys said earlier, you can throw Caruso out there on Jokic because you have so many matchups that lets you basically see how you can run different things at him. So definitely like how these two teams built, and they got there off of, like you said, building their identity and then building their culture and then building their overall program and developing players.
And talk about, and I don't think what gets talked about enough is like that wins, but patience. Like, no one is patient. We see it in the NFL. We got the rookie quarterback out there day one, and they look like hot trash, and then you're ready to give up on them in year two. Not everybody's going to be a C.J. Stroud. Not everybody's going to be a Jaden Daniels year one or even a Dak Prescott that year. But what I'm trying to say is that if you guys actually wait and develop these people and work with these people and don't get rid of the coaching regime either and see what they grow into, That's going to be something. And if you think about it right now, both these teams are built off one trade, two. One person, two different trades, but one person literally did that. OKC is set for life. They probably have, another couple more first-round picks? And then I know that off the Paul George movement for Tyrese Haliburton to get that's how they got Tyrese, because they were able to move him in Sabonis. And that was also a fun thing too. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, this way works. This way works. But although this way works, there's a clear favorite. I mean, on FanDuel, they have the Thunder as the favorites by a large margin. But I would say, look at the rosters. Just because you see names don't mean they don't play. I think we got to also stop looking at the names of who has who and start looking at the way, like, the Pacers playing well together. They're well older. They put that space. The Thunder are a damn good defensive team. If you are like a coach, this is, Dom, tell me, this is one of these finals you might want to watch.
It absolutely is, you know. And I think the one, the biggest X factor from a conceptual standpoint in this series is the turnover battle. You know, the Indiana Pacers are one of the league's most efficient offenses, and a lot, you know, that's in credit to their ability to avoid turnovers. Meanwhile, you know, you have an OKC team where their defensive, you know, philosophy and identity is about turnover creation. So, you know, this is strength meeting strength. And I'm really excited to watch it from that aspect.
Dude, we get to watch Tyrese Halliburton and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander go at it. We also get to watch Pascal Siakam and Jalen Williams go at it, the Robins. Also, too, I think I'm going to be honest, it's about the benches. What bench is going to be better? That's what's going to be. And this is going to be a big slice to humble pie to both New York and to the Timberwolves. It's like, this is the way to do it. You got to have a bench as well. You have to. I mean, look at some of the names that come up the Thunder bench. You got other Jalen Williams. You got, you know, Kaysom Wallace. You got Isaiah Joe. Those are game changers. I remember in the Nuggets series, Kaysom Wallace came out and gave him a clutch 6 points when they needed the most and a hot and energizer dunk on Jokic. Isaiah Joe came out shooting from beyond the arc and making the shots. And then Jalen Williams, granted, the other Jalen, granted, he doesn't have as big of an impact, but also, too, that's another body they have to throw on anybody at need. You think about it. You have, and also Alex Caruso is also a game changer. The fact that he can guard 1 through 5 now and took on the Jokic is not easy guard because Jokic is arguably just as Embiid. They do the same thing. But let's break this matchup down a little bit more. The spread of OKC is 9.5. How does everybody feel about game one? The Thunder, now, for those who don't know, Oklahoma City was in tornado watches and warnings all day yesterday. So the Indiana just got there today. So I don't know if anyone's really big in the superstition about flying before one day of a game, all this muscle stuff. This out there, I'm not a scientist, sports science. I don't do that. I just talk about it. But you get in there today. Games tomorrow at 8:30, which is really 8:45. Thanks, Dom, for reminding me. Game one, Trent. How you feel about game one?
Pacers got to win game one. This series, I really don't like the cross matchups. You got Dortcher, Chamberlain, Halliburton, and I don't know who's guarding SGA. If it's going to be Neesmith, because you need two people, because he's going to get somebody in foul trouble. So, like I said, Pacers need this game, kind of the same thing what they did to the Knicks, to get the series like, okay, we can win this, because I really don't like none of the matchups for the Pacers besides Siakam. So if I have to say, like I said, if I have to say one of your star players is the X factor, you got to do a lot to win. So I want to say that I just want the Pacers to win for a good series, but I have the series 5, Thunder and 5, and that's a gentleman's sweep, being honest.
You got gentleman's sweep for Thunder 5. Now, I want to go back on the point you just touched to the Shai Gilgeous point. You will get your guy in foul trouble, but this notion of flopping, I hate it. I went on a rant last pod about it, but I want to get your thoughts because they're calling Shai Gilgeous a flopper. So my spiel trip was, are we blaming him for something that the NBA created and allowed? Or are we blaming him? Like, people use the term flopper, but I think they forget that this is what the league is. This is what the league is. So, what's your whole thoughts and takes on the whole Shai Gilgeous flopping thing and all that?
He's doing everything in the handbook. You know what I mean? You can't stop it. And a lot of the time, I do get the free throw motion. It is terrible to watch. But at the same time, he doesn't have 30 free throws, 30 points. He's shooting over 50%. He almost averaged more than, I think, what was it, 6 assists that series. So he's getting them involved. Rebound numbers is high. Like I said, it's efficient. So you can't stop him. This is kind of both of the ways. It's not fun to watch. Don't get me wrong. I didn't like it when Harden did it. Trey Young did it. Jalen Brunson.
Jokic and Embiid do it too, unfortunately.
Yeah, but they do it too, exactly. I don't like it when they do it, but hey, it's efficient. It's helping this team get the wins. And like I said, it's not all 30 for 30 from free throw. He scored 50s, 40s, 30s off of just shots. I've seen it before. So it's not like he's just living at the line. You leave him open for the mid-range, it's cash. If you play over top, he goes to the bucket. And if he hits the three, good luck to you.
And to that point, like we said, when you said everything in the rule book, this is that. The one thing I said differently is that at least he makes these shots that they're calling him a free throw merchant on. Like we've seen, like Don, we talk about, we've seen James Harden run down the lane, bump, throw their hands up. We've seen Joel Embiid just throw their hands up. Jokic, same thing. Like, at least my biggest thing, if you're going to be drawing these fouls and getting these fouls, make the shot at least. Show me that you're actually attempting, you're not going. I think that's the difference. But game one in Oklahoma, 8:45 basically. It starts at 8:30, 8:45 tip off. ABC. How we feel about game one?
I mean, you know, I'll be honest. You know, I look, a lot of people, you know that I've talked to have said, yeah, look, the Pacers have to win this one on the road. Quite frankly, you know, I don't know what that means. This is the NBA Finals. You have to win every game. That's how you win the series. But you know, I do get where people are coming from on that. I do think it's a big one. I think it's big to steal one on the road. Because you know, listen, this part of what's made this Pacers team very successful this postseason is they've been very good on the road. And you know, they've been good on the road early. Now, yeah, you know, you go back to that second round in Cleveland where, yeah, you know what? Look, they were battling a banged up team, but you know, listen, that's part of the game. You know, but
I mean, Donovan Mitchell still went for 40, he was there,
yeah. And look, in New York, they took game one at the Garden. So, you know, you want to continue to have that rhythm of, you know, look, we're going to take away the home court. I think they could steal this game because here's my thing. You know, I look at this Pacers offense. They push off of everything, not just missed shots, you know, and live ball turnovers, but, hey, made baskets and free throws. They're really good at generating easy baskets. So I look at this OKC defense and, you know, I see a challenge there. You know, I think they're going to have to adjust to that early. And if they don't, you know, Indy's not going to look back like they've been doing. So I think the Pacers can get game one on the road.
So you're thinking they can get game one on the road. Here's my thing. I don't think so. I don't think they get game one. I think they realize that this is a whole, I think, and they already know this, but I think they're going to realize that this is a different beast than bad with the Knicks, where you're not just dealing with only one predominant score, and when that other series is more so they had two, you're dealing with a group that can all respectfully score and have big nights on their own. And the night where Shai Gilgeous had a 40-point triple-double, you know, underline, Jalen Williams had 34 points. No one talked about that. Also, in that same game that went to overtime, Chet had 21. So I see the Pacers losing game one. I do agree. Before you go back to Indiana, you have to take at least one.
And yeah, you can't go down 2-0. I think
you can't go down 2-0. Yeah, but you are right, Dom. It's the NBA Finals. Every game matters. It's not just.
Yeah, like I do, like, you know, to be fair and listen, you know, I get where everybody's coming from, but I'm Gavin, you know where I know.
But this is
the playoffs. You know, what are they going to let game one slide? Like, come on, people. Like, I get the notion behind it, but to be like, they have to get game one. Well, yeah, no kidding, you know.
But also too, I look at like game like the Thunder, man. Like this playoff run for the Thunder, they've been the same way, the same time. The first game they played against the Memphis Grizzlies, and I say what you want about the Memphis Grizzlies, no chance. They beat them by damn near 50. They make sure that they take care of their business at home. The only time that I've seen they slip up at home, and ever since that they've become more spam, was when Aaron Gordon hit the game winner at the end to beat them. So I think this is going to be different. I think game one is not going to say a lot because it's still a fill-out thing. I'm going with Thunder in the first game. I think Shai Gilgeous reminds everybody, I am the start of the show. Granted, I think both parties will have the respect size, but ultimately, I think it's just going to be, and kind of what Trent talked about, it's depth, strength in numbers. And I think I would take the Thunder's bench a little more over the Pacers' bench.
Yeah, Thunder clearly has the best bench in the league.
They do. And I would say that in the playoffs, it's not so much about what you did in the season. It's if I put my bench in, can they generate some sort of momentum in that 5 to 6, 7 minutes are out there, and who's going to do it for me? So it'll be interesting to see. Both coaches are great. So, Trent, you're going with 5. Is that correct? Gentlemen, sweet 5?
Yeah, I really don't see the Pacers really doing anything to really handle the Thunder, SGA, Jalen Williams, and I think Chet's going to be the biggest X-factor for them.
So you're rocking with Chet's X-factor as well?
Yeah, it's so hard. Like I said, you can go there. I like Cason Wallace. You can go anybody on the Thunder, but I'm gonna go with Chet. I think him pulling Miles Turner out and just exploiting that matchup, I think Chet's gonna actually get the better of that matchup.
Good, yeah.
No, I 1,000% agree with Trent on that. You know, you had look, you had a 7-footer who can step out and shoot and also, you know, face up and drive, you know, to the rim against Miles Turner, who hasn't seen a whole lot of that this postseason. That definitely changes things. You know, if Chet is firing on all cylinders and playing like we all know he can play, that's going to make things very difficult for Indiana. That's also going to affect their depth because, you know, look, if Miles Turner gets in foul trouble early, you know, you're gonna have to kind of work around that. And that's not something, you know, their rotation has been challenged with yet. So I 1,000% agree that Chet is the X factor there.
Now, how many games and who you got taking the finals?
I'm going OKC. You know, they've been the best team all year. And I think it shows up on the biggest stage. I'm gonna go in six though. I'm gonna go
You're
in
going
six.
six.
I feel like they get up 3-1 and then maybe Indy steals one more off of them. I wouldn't be surprised if this thing's in ends in five. But I think I could see Indy getting two. But I think OKC ultimately gets this thing done in six.
I agree with you. I think Chet Holmgren has to be the X factor this one. I'm still gonna rock with Jalen Green being that guy because you're the two. You're the Robin. You have to show up. You have to be there. I remember when in early in the Nuggets series where he was struggling and he wasn't showing up, and it was just Shea and company, you know, fending off Jokic. Then that series switched when he actually started playing basketball again. And then you saw what happened against the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves didn't have a shot. I do agree with Chet being able to, you know, play out, space out, hit and go ahead, hit, you know, 3-point shots and pull Miles Turner away from the basket. It was split to see. It's going to make Pascal Siakam be more of a rim protector if he's now in the perimeter as well, which will give a free, you know, a free drive for Shea and the company to go to the basket. But it's hard. I'm stuck between five and six games. I'm gonna go with Gem and Sweep five. I just think that it is gonna run into a strength in numbers thing. I think Indiana's gonna get exploited on some things that they didn't have to deal with. And that's just the fact that when you're playing against a team like New York, yeah, Cat was you know, on the 3-point line, Cat was also pulling from damn near 40 and missing too at the same time. Cat really didn't have a consistent 3-point shot the entire series. Mitchell Robinson wasn't doing much outside the you know, out there several percent screens. This is the first time I think they'll actually have to deal with that, and I would like to see how they adjust. Because I wonder, because I think isn't the starting lineup for Oklahoma City, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the starting lineup, it's Shea, it's Dort, I believe, and then
Yeah, Dort
Williams,
goes under the guard, Howard.
and then it's Dort, and then it's Williams, Chet, and Hartenstein, correct? So Pascal Siakam may be the guy on it. So would that change the thought if Pascal Siakam's on? Is on Chet Holmgren for if he because I think Chet plays a power forward. Does that change your mind, Trent? Or
Yeah.
change your...
Now you're right about that. That's what I was saying. Yeah.
Nah, they're gonna put Jalen Williams on Pascal.
Yeah.
Just move Holmgren to whoever. And they were throwing Caruso in there. I think Holmgren started with Caruso. The Nuggets game, and then they sat Hartenstein. That's what's too much. They can do anything.
Yeah, this is going to be a good series for their smaller lineups. This is
Is
definitely a good
it?
series for them to pull out their smaller lineups.
3-point shooting too. It's going to be on display as well. Both teams are
Oh yeah, two of
good
the best
behind.
corner three shooting teams in the league.
Isaiah Joe and Neesmith. Even Caruso gets a three a couple times here and there. But I will say, I'm rocking with the Thunder though. Anyone got a Finals MVP? Thunder's went probably
Shay,
Shea.
I don't
Shea.
go Shay.
Shea.
Yeah, Shea's gonna take that. He's gonna win it all. Every award.
And real quick before we get up out of here, Trey, I know for you being the voice of the Sixers, got the third pick, man. Ace Bailey, how we feeling? What you want?
Ace Bailey, we gotta take Ace Bailey. We gotta start building. Like, you see what everybody's doing. Gotta start getting these wings, man. Just build a definite number. We got Cade coming back, Justin Edwards, We'll bring in Bailey. Is Paul George going to be out there running? Like I said, Embiid.
Are you running this team back? You're running this team back? You're not moving? You're not moving Paul George?
This is probably this is my last year. Yeah, you might as well run it back. You know what I'm saying? You get another year out of it. If it doesn't work, then you kind of just break it apart. But, you know, I saw a little glimpses of it earlier. I think right around Christmas we beat Boston. Everything was clicking, so it wasn't that bad. It was just, like I said, the injury bug happened. So you're not going to really get a better player than Joel Embiid if he's healthy and he's, like, locked in. So I'm going to run it back one more year. And if not, then give the rings to Maxey, and then we got Ace Bailey.
Give the rings over. My thing is, you don't want to. What is too late? Because you're going to fall into this situation where teams like the Indianas, teams like Atlanta, like Detroit is here. You can't ignore Detroit no more. And they're going to get Jaden Ivey back next year. Orlando is here. I think if maybe Chicago gets a nice piece to add somebody, they could be here as well. So, like, my thing is, like, I say you don't blow it up completely this summer, but you because my biggest thing is if you wait, what is the value of Paul George going to like next year? What is the value of Embiid going to like next year? You have a nice young core. You give it to Maxey. McCain's going to come back. McCain was nice. He looked like rookie of the year before he went out. If running it back isn't a bad idea, you're right. There was some glimpse. I mean, it was there. We saw it. But we also know, can see that if Joel Embiid starts the season off like he does every year, which is for some reason he can't start the year off and actually play, I don't understand how you go to the Olympics and you come back hurt. I mean, I'm sorry, but the Olympics to me is no disrespect, but the Olympics is like a club event, and the job is the job, and you showed up for the club and you wasn't ready for your job. And you played less games this year than you did. And every, like, I don't get it. I understand Paul George. And Paul George was never really healthy from the start after the whole knee injury in Washington. But I mean, come on.
And then, I agree. I just think the money on the other end.
Well, yeah.
I don't think you're able to flip Paul George for pretty much anything because of the numbers. So, like I said, I think Embiid, anybody will come calling, the right team will come through them. So that's why you have to. Kind of like I know what you're saying. Well, why wait? But you're gonna have to wait anyway with Paul George. I don't think his trade value is anything unless you ship the number three pick with it.
So what does the Sixers do this offseason? Outside of like Jesse,
to sign Quentin Grimes back. I think he's found a home. I think that's one of the wings we needed. And like I said, hopefully you get McCain. Justin Edwards, you have Maxey, you have Paul George, we re-signed Ubaldo, and now we have a nice little, like I said, set. Now the numbers and strength of numbers look way better. And like I said, we can see what a Oubre does and pretty much go get another center. I like Andre Drummond, but I don't think that's going to work anymore. I think his time's up.
I think he's unmotivated. He don't got that same spark anymore. Like you said. I don't know. I look at the Sixers and I say the ceiling is it could be championship.
Yeah, you gotta give them a chance, man. I mean, it's tough because
I mean, like the body gotta give them a chance more though.
But like you said, the Pistons were just there. They had Blake Griffin, and then they just made it that one year. They decided to blow it up, let him go, and then he went to Brooklyn. So every team was there. Pacers literally just did it where they said, you know what, Paul George, you're out of here, and then they started with Sabonis. So it took a couple of years.
That was a good couple of runs. Sabonis and Oladipo.
Yeah, but I think what's it called had way higher value. Paul George had way higher value back then. So even with OKC, kind of the same thing. They nobody thought that was going to happen. Paul George and them just had a run, and they said, you know, we're going to blow it up because y'all got value. And then they got Russ and then made the move. So that's where they are now. Because I don't want to be like the Kings where you just do everything and throw, and I think they're going to be still in the same spot they've been in for the last 20 years.
Now, if this doesn't work, right, I don't want Nick Nurse taking the blame, which he probably will because that's how it goes.
He will. Somebody's going to get it. It's going to be the coach.
You got to look at the general manager.
Oh, yeah, no, it's the organization. That's what I said. Most of the teams you see the general manager organization. Kind of see the same thing with the Nuggets. When they're not on the same page, you get a bunch of dysfunction.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. If you don't mind me asking you that, let me ask you this. Dom, because we touched on it. We're going to get a third opinion here. Mike Malone gets fired before the playoffs for reasons that makes absolutely no sense. You go on, you take the best team in the NBA to seven. Why is this like the notion of winning coaches is getting fired?
I mean, I think the reality here is that the NBA is the only league that, you know, that this kind of – I'm not going to say it doesn't happen in other leagues.
The NFL, haven't we?
I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, to the point where, like, okay, in the NFL, the equivalent of what Denver did this year would have been had, like, the Rams fired Sean McVay right before the wild card round. Like, yeah, you know, I'm not saying, you know, that when you get to these other leagues, be it the NFL, Major League Baseball, or the NHL, where, you know, yeah, like, coaches get fired in season. But the NBA has a pattern of coaches in winning situations getting fired out of nowhere, whether it's right before the All-Star break or right before the playoffs. And it makes zero sense. Part of that's because the players, you know, and this is, I think, a rant for another day, but the Players Association, you know, is too strong in that league. But, you know,
I would say to your point, though, because you – Dwayne Casey, right? You had Dwayne Casey. You have
– Dwayne Casey, though, was a situation where that actually kind of worked.
It, in a weird way, it did, but he kind
of – No, that did. Like that to me, like, Dwayne Casey, yeah, it was – the optics were horrible because he got Coach of the Year.
And then,
I get where people come from on that.
And then Adrian Griffin was 30 best.
Yeah, that one didn't make sense to me. And he was like a brand new. He was a first year head coach.
That was his first year.
Yeah, he was a first year head
coach. He got fired with 40 some games in.
Yeah, like the NBA. Like what I'm saying, the NBA is the only league where this continues to happen.
It kind of hurts the league. Trent, what's your take on it? Like, I don't know that.
A lot of internal going on, like Don kind of touched on, player associations, players. The players have a lot of pool. So what we see is them winning, but you might not see the behind the scenes. Kind of having with the Nuggets. There's a couple posts with Mike Malone and Jokic getting into it. And then I think Mike Malone with the whole Bruce Brown, KCP, and MPJ thing. So there's a lot of things internal, but I think it's just like the coaches are just the easy scapegoat. So kind of like with Thibodeau, like, yeah, I think they need to go a different direction, but the coaches get the scapegoat because it's so hard to keep the players.
See, it's weird because I kind of saw that coming, though. I kind of saw the Thibodeau. I saw the Thibodeau one coming in a weird way. You got bounced out the same reason 3 straight years in a row. 1 year you kind of get a pass because you were kind of injury battle, but it's still the same thing. Failure to... I guess, well, I don't want to say that because the system works. I mean, he's a damn good coach. Don't get it twisted. But, like, I saw this was coming in the way how it happened. Do I agree with that?
It happened in T-Wolf. This has kind of been his motto. I think he's just a builder-up coach. It was kind of the same, like, how he did the same thing in Chicago and the same thing happened in Minnesota. So, you can kind of see, hey, you need a new direction. You kind of need more of an exit as those guys. I think he's more of a player coach. So at first, you get everybody to buy in. And then when you lose like this, I think the teams start to see, hey, we need an exit as those guy late in the fourth quarter to draw up a couple plays or get Cat some easy touches or tell him to stop doing dumb fouls and things like that. And I think that's what the New York started to see.
We're just tipping those way. Anyone got a place? I know that the Suns' job is closed.
I think he just rides off into the sunset at this point. You know,
I agree.
Yeah. He's 67. He's had a heck of a run for, you know, the shelf life that NBA head coaches have nowadays. You know, the further and further we get away from guys like him, you know, he's going to look really good. I'm not saying he's a Hall of Fame coach by any means, but I mean, to have had 3 different head coaching stops and taken 2 of those teams to a conference finals, especially, you know, in given that it's one was Chicago, the another one was the Knicks. That's a really good look. I think, you know, he's kind of at the point where he'll just ride off into the sunset. And
he can get to a young team. If he can get to a young team, I think he'll come back. He needs a young team.
Do you think he could? You think he could refix Memphis? What's going on down there?
I don't like it. I'm talking about like a team that's not even supposed to win. Yeah. So it's just a bunch of younger guys. He can run them. Memphis is going to. They have a bigger problem, which I don't like. I think they're just roster, and I think they're starting to see it. I don't. They have to pay Jaren Jackson this summer, which I don't think they should do. But yeah, I don't.
They Memphis paid John already.
Yeah, Josh paid, but he's going to be his free agent's coming up again. So I and it's already looking like it's dysfunctional, and he's not coming back.
That's going to be interesting to see because that at one point that was it. That was the face. Before we get out of here, Trent, we like to do a little fun thing at the end of the show. Normally we do like a little like top five list. I ain't wanna. So today's end of the show, and Dom, I just off the top of the head here. What is the greatest sports moment you either witnessed live or just seen on TV? It could be anything, any sport, no matter the year, your eyes, you saw or you lived it.
Anyone? Well, I just saw, they just came, the Allen Iverson game one, 2001 finals against the Lakers when he had the 48, the step over game. They just replayed that on my timeline. I remember watching that. Thinking that the Sixers was actually going to win. And then it's like now looking back at it, the Lakers were undefeated at that point. And I just remember the time. I think everybody, if you had an Allen Iverson jersey the next day at school, I think everybody had it on. But I think we were still in school at this point. I think school was later. It's kind of flip-flop for your generation, but I feel like we still had school. And it was going crazy because Allen Iverson, or maybe the season was earlier. It could have been that too. There was no there was no play in the tournament. There was no tournament, so.
Good.
Oh man,
that's classic too. By the way,
that game was actually my brother's birthday. That was the night my brother was born.
That's when he was born.
Yeah, happy, June 7th.
Happy birthday, Gabe. We gotta get the right here.
Shout out to my boy Gabe.
Oh my god, yeah. Like I don't. Yeah, it's funny. My that's tough. Live?
Because you've been to a lot of them.
I don't know if I have a live one. Maybe, probably. Hold on. We talked about this on the radio show once. Live, I would go with the Rhys Hoskins bat spike. Because that was my first postseason baseball game that I attended in person, and I was there for that game. So that's live on TV. If I had to pick one, I would probably go. I'm not gonna go with a moment. I'll go with a half of the game. I'll go with the second half of Super Bowl 51 to see the Patriots climb back into that game and do what they did was incredible.
Luckily, somebody's not here because you know you vanished. That was a good Super Bowl. Shit. Since he did a live in person, you got in person one?
I can't think of anything off the top.
All right, gotcha.
I was there where I think Allen Iverson had like 30. He had an insane amount of free throws. He got to the line. But yeah, I can't think of anything live. I'm gonna definitely have some. I had to think of. I think you asked me this before, and I really couldn't think of anything.
All good, take your time. I, you know, if it comes up at the end, we got you. But for me, I'm going to say on TV, as a Steph Curry guy, this hurts for me to say this, but the final 2 minutes, whatever it was, ooh, game good. Seven, that was one. That was, dude, let me tell you something. We're all basketball guys here. As you guys said, we just talked 48 minutes of basketball. But to watch, that was like pure, like, not that, like stars just going at it. Kyrie with the big shot, LeBron with the block, Steph Curry was going crazy the whole game. You couldn't ask for anything better than that. And then something in person. Ooh, that's difficult. I would say in person. I'm going to go, ooh, because I've been to a lot of games. I got some Phillies ones. I got some things. I'm going to go game. I think it was game two of the Sixers Atlanta Hawks series. My first ever playoff basketball game, I was there. Saw a little baby, got a chance to, experience the crowd. And that's the first time I realized there's a difference from regular season and postseason. And I'll throw another moment in there. Joel Embiid 60-point game. I was there. I was there for that. Or 50-point game. 50-point game, sorry. I was there against the Magic. And if you rewind and watch that game, you'll see me sitting down low in seats I should not be at.
Do you have a timestamp for me?
Huh?
Do you have a timestamp for me on the TV?
First quarter.
Okay.
I'm so serious. First quarter. But, Trent, man, we appreciate you for being here. Actually, those are weak moments. I apologize. My dummy. When Harrison Barnes is the game winner, I was there. I'll use that one. But we appreciate you for being here. We definitely got to get you on the pod again for sure. Definitely around football season when the football thing comes back. Eagles, Cowboys, week one. Maybe I have to get you here. That'll be a good one. But yeah, man, anything else you want to say before we get up out of here?
Thanks for having me, fellas. I appreciate it. Good time. Keep doing what y'all doing. Keep grinding.
Appreciate it. We definitely will add a video element. We'll talk about it right down. That's on the works.
No, that's on the docket.
First ever late night pod. I ain't going to lie. It's kind of cool. Hopefully I ain't being too loud to everybody downstairs. But that being said, y'all, this is the Kickback Pod. Make sure you not subscribe yet, but make sure you like, give this a 5-star on Apple Pod. Make sure you share this with everybody. Tell everybody the Kickback Pod is going strong. The NBA Finals are here. You heard it here. Everybody on this is going with the Thunder. We got 2 Game 6s and a Game 5 gentlemen sweep. Both all agree that Shea will be Finals MVP. Me and Don will be here. Well, hopefully Pat will be here. But me and Don will definitely be here to document most of the Finals. I know Don is going away on a trip. But with that being said, I'm Gavin. That's Trent. That's Dom. This is the Kickback Pod. We're signing out. Have a good one, everybody. Go Thunder.